KYW News Radio original podcasts. From KYW News Radio 103.9 FM, this is Bridging Philly, connecting our communities on the issues that matter to you. Presented by Gift of Life Donor Program. Register as an organ donor at donorsone.org.
Hello, I'm Raquel Williams. Welcome to Bridging Philly, the power of giving back. That's what inspired the founder of It Takes a Village to Feed One Child to fight food insecurity across our region. Since its founding in 2017, it's provided over 250,000 meals monthly each year to people in low-income and disadvantaged communities. I sit with the founder, Mark Wainwright, along with one of their partners, to learn more about the importance of this venture.
It takes a village. It takes all of us.
Charity Howard celebrates 10 years of a museum in Germantown.
The Colored Girls Museum is truly beyond my wildest imagination.
All that's coming up on Bridging Philly. We often talk about feeding programs on this program, and that's because the crisis of food insecurity in our region isn't going away. Across Pennsylvania, more than 1.2 million residents, including one in eight children, experience food insecurity, and research shows that hunger is rising nationwide due in part to high cost of living and the rollback of pandemic-era supports that once helped families stay afloat. Now, these pressures are deeply felt in our area where many families are working but still unable to consistently put food on the table. It Takes a Village to Feed One Child is a nonprofit organization founded in 2017 by Mark Wainwright. They provide more than 250,000 meals every month across the tri-state area. Mark joins us now, along with Dr. Corinne Green, Executive Director of Mighty Writers, one of their key partner organizations. Welcome to Bridging Philly.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, Mark, of course, we have to get your story. I know that your work is rooted in your own lived experience growing up in West Philadelphia, watching your mom raise four boys on her own. How does her legacy kind of influence the organization's work?
It influences the organization every single day. I lost my mom back in 2015.
I'm sorry.
To cancer. What I witnessed from my mother growing up in a single parent household, she was a revenue investigator for the city of Philadelphia. She worked there for 30 years. She got an award when she retired for never missing a day of work. So I saw her work ethic early on, which I take on right now, but also saw her heart to give back to the community. Through her work with the city, she was able to provide resources to the community, not having much money to live on herself. Not only that, when she went out shopping at supermarkets, she not only bought for the four of us, but she bought for the kids on the block.
Wow.
And so that really touched me. And, you know, when she would pull up in her car, you would see all of the kids running over to the car, grabbing the groceries, taking them in the house. It resonated with me. It stuck with me. It's still with me today. How many children can I touch? How many children can I feed?
Mm-hmm.
How many communities that are underprivileged can we serve?
Yeah. Well, what happened in 2017 that made you decide, you know, this is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to dedicate my time to and founding It Takes a Village to Feed One Child?
It was a roller coaster ride to get there. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I had a former for-profit for 25 years. It was called Davenport Inc. We provided lunches to schools, private schools, charter schools, Catholic schools, Head Start programs. We operated in three different states, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware. Somewhere around 2014, I decided that, pardon my expression, it wasn't sexy enough for me.
Okay.
I needed something where I could put on a suit. So as I was building that organization, I worked in banking, Wachovia, before it merged with Wells Fargo. I worked for New York Life Insurance. I worked in real estate. I won the highest awards in all three sectors. But somewhere around 2015, when my mom passed away, I really felt the call of God to go back to feeding children. And right around that time, I received an email from the Pennsylvania Department of Education, and they said, we're not receiving any more contracts from you, from the former company. What happened? And I gave them a story. I went into real estate. I'm happy with real estate. They said, did you think about being a sponsor for us? And I didn't know what that was. And they said, it's similar to what you were doing, except you control the administrative side. You can contract out to third-party vendors, or you can make the meals yourself. And I said, let me look into this. They sent me the paperwork to sign up. I said no to them three times. And the third time they sent it to me, I said, let me take it piece by piece. One of the approval process is you need one center to work with. So I just started praying to God and saying, hey, how do I get a center? He said, sit at your desk, targeted area, send out about 50 emails a day. One center responded to us. And the owner was from Poland. She sounded like she was crying over the phone. She had a current sponsor, and he demanded that she get on a plane and come back to satisfy some mandatory training. So to make a long story short, we signed that sponsor up. It was right here in Center City at Spring Garden. The owner disclosed to me she had three other centers that were much larger. So we took on those four centers in 3 months. And then over the years, we grew to 106 centers today.
Wow. Wow. That is quite the story.
Yes.
But it also shows your work ethic and the persistence that you needed to continue to push through. I'm wondering, though, you know, back in 2017, when this whole thing started, what kind of gaps did you see in the community? What needs did you see?
I saw the responses from the centers that I was working with, their emails, their phone calls, you know, open up their hearts saying things like, you know, without organizations like yours, these children wouldn't receive a nutritious and healthy meal. Mm-hmm. We need organizations like yours. I'll take it a step back. Me and my wife did something, and it was actually her idea. Our three children were younger when I started this organization in 2017. So don't laugh, but we called around childcare centers as if we were enrolling their child. And they said, we want to talk about the food program. What you like about it, what you don't like about it. And we sat there and took notes, and three things, you know, popped off the pages. They said it's the response time from sponsors. When we have a concern or an issue or a child that needs something, they don't respond to us right away. So we took a note on that. They said the quality of food that we're receiving. The children don't eat the food. So when I had the for-profit for 25 years, the reason why I grew so large is because our focus was quality. We want to put together a food program that's appealing to children from the colors of the food, from the taste of the food. And we also want it to be nutritionally balanced because our children need that. They function better when they have a healthy and balanced nutritional program. And then the last thing was these centers needed funding. So I knew coming in as a safe sponsor, I can make the food myself like I did before, but I could contract out to a third party. I'm giving away some of my secrets now. But when you contract out to a third party, it goes to the lowest bidder, and it creates a gap in funding that you could pass on to the center. So we picked up steam over the years, which allowed us to grow to the level we are today just by hammering down those three things: response time, quality food, and providing funding to our centers. And that's what they needed the most.
Okay. I definitely want to get a picture of what it's like to provide 250,000 meals a month. We'll get into that. But I want to ask Dr. Green, how did you end up partnering with Mark? And tell us more about Mighty Riders.
Yeah, so Mighty Riders is a local organization that primarily focuses on building children literacy and academic skills as it relates to writing and reading. And so one of the things we uncovered is that students who primary needs are not met doesn't necessarily perform well academically. And so we know that children that are hungry are not performing to their best level in their academic and reading and writing skills. And much like Mark, have a personal experience. I grew up in public housing in Brooklyn, New York. My mother was a heroin addict up until the time she was able to get clean in my junior year of college. And my mother relied on many programs that had given out food, right? And so I remember standing in the lines waiting for government food to be delivered or getting donations from local community centers and programs, much like It Takes a Village to Feed One Child. And so my commitment to our centers was, one, not only do we realize that our students are coming from communities that also have food insecurities and lack of access to healthy, quality food. So my commitment was to partner with an organization that would be able to provide our students just that. Wow. And our families and our communities. And so we do have 8 centers across Pennsylvania and New Jersey. And we do have 11 distribution sites.
Yeah. You know, just when we talk about feeding programs, you always talk about the children, because it's the children and the most vulnerable who are often so affected by this. And it's great that you're partnering with this organization. What makes It Takes a Village to Feed One Child different than, say, other food distribution feeding centers? Why are you partnering with them specifically?
When we partner with them specifically, for two reasons. One, it's the intentionality about making it consistent and that it makes sense for students and families and community members to be full and healthy. And two, I think it was a brilliant idea in terms as it relates to our funding, right? And so we are able to receive some assistance and in the practice of nonprofit, the business of nonprofit, those type of partnerships make sense, right? Mm-hmm. So we were very intentional about finding partners that understand our mission in terms of being able to service the whole child. Mm-hmm. We did not actually get into the food distribution space until 2020. So Mighty Writers started in 2009, but when the pandemic hit, we realized we had all this real estate and space, but we didn't have programming happening because students and families were not able to come into the space. And so we thought, how could we use the space to meet a basic need right now? And so we got into the distribution. And now distribution and food insecurity makes up about half of our general business and operation. And we have more food supporting and distribution sites than we actually have academic and programming locations.
Bridging Philly continues in a moment.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Back to Bridging Philly, connecting our communities on the issues that matter to you.
Unless this is in your backyard, you're probably not really thinking about the fact that there are families that are struggling and have to make a choice between feeding family and paying a bill.
Yep.
And I think a lot of our eyes were open during the pandemic when we really saw feeding programs in action, mobile feeding programs, and the long lines of cars. And then we realized, okay, wait a minute, this is definitely an issue. And the face of food insecurity doesn't look like what some people may think.
I think, absolutely.
So I wanted you both to kind of talk about that. You know, the families you serve, who are they? What are they going through? And what does the face of food insecurity look like?
Let me tell you this. I'm glad that you made that statement because the families and in the individuals we see that we feed in looks like just like you and I. And although there may be a perception that it is, you know, those in the poorest communities, while that may be true in some cases, we've seen, given the times, professionals, government workers, folks that have been going through transition as it relates to the economy. And we've been serving those underrepresented families and students. And so for us, again, is about servicing that whole community and showing up and meeting the need that exists. And so it could be a person like you and I that, you know, at any given time could find ourselves in one of those lines or find ourselves enrolling our students in free full day summer camp, free, in our case, after school programming that not only is quality programming, but also be able to meet and bridge that gap on some of the daily basic needs that we may have been struggling with.
I would say for us, when we started this nonprofit in 2017, it was really a holistic approach. Like, if you look at our articles of corporation, our name is It Takes a Village to Feed One Child, but FEED in our name is actually an acronym for Fostering Enrichment and Empowerment for Development. We have more enrichment programs than we have food. Food is only one thing.
Yep.
We started with food to establish credibility as a nonprofit. And we did that over a 7-year period. But starting in 2024, we really started to open up and partner with organizations like Mighty Writers, Brotherly Love, Pro-Am, Unique Dreams, Philadelphia Police District. We're part of City Council's Food Task Force. We're part of Congressional Hunger Center. We're part of Team Nutrition. So it's an opportunity for us to help people become self-sufficient, because what is the root of hunger? That's what we're really trying to get to as an organization. So although we're feeding people physically, we're trying to start our enrichment programs to feed them mentally as well. Because if you get to the mental of these families and help them to be self-sufficient, help them to sustain, help them to have a better quality of life through enrichment programs, then you really address the hunger issue. And that's why it's great to partner with Mighty Riders, because they created a foundation of enrichment programs that we can kind of hitch our wagon to, start to develop our own, start to unpack those articles of corporation, and really get to the heart of the problem with the families in the community.
Okay.
And I'll add to that, as Mark was saying, for us, we are Mighty Writers, right? W-R-I-T-E-R-S, right? And so while there is literacy and writing access, our goal over the next several years is to expand that to Mighty Writers, R-I-G-H-T-R-S, because we are sending a message to our families that we have a right to quality education. We have a right to great housing. Yeah. We have a right to be in spaces where others think that we are not welcome. We have a right to education. We have a right to healthy food, right? And so as we expand our programming, we're working with organizations like the public housing authorities, helping folks to become self-sufficient as they might rely on public housing, but now they are getting access to educational program that allows them to transition out to be able to come self-sufficient. Working with organizations across the city in the spaces that we're in to give students and families access to educational experiences. In our case, we're doing HBCU tours, college access, being able to expose our children and families into what the possibilities are for that road out of poverty, right? We're doing financial literacy programs. We're bringing families into the center for Family Right Night that allows families to work with their youth, whether it looks like helping the adults with essay writing or students working with their caregivers on what they are learning and how they are applying. So we realize that when our families and our students understand that they have a right to this information, they have a right to these experiences, they have a right to this road to access, it allows them to become more self-sufficient.
Yeah, and I'll just add this. I saw a model of that for me personally. Although my mother resonated with me very well, she put me in a boarding school. It was called Scotland School for Veterans Children. So the boarding school was made up of all inner city kids in Philadelphia. Beautiful campus, every trade school you can imagine, every enrichment program you can imagine. And that was one of the things when I created this organization. Can I create a model pilot like that? Where we partner with an organization to start a trade school this year in Philadelphia. If I could create a program like that, that's ideal for It Takes a Village to Feed One Child, and that's one of our goals long term.
It sounds like you've got wraparound services for the people that you're serving. I can see the village concept. So I wanted to ask you, really, because you obviously you called this It Takes a Village to Feed One Child, what does that mean exactly to you?
To me personally, so the word child in that name means all God's children.
That's right.
So it doesn't really specifically mean a young child. We're all God's children. So I'm trying to feed all of us. We started with children. We feed seniors today. But it takes a village. It takes all of us. I think when I started it in the basement of my home in 2017, at the forefront of my mind is if I could just feed one child through this organization. And then one child could lead to a second child, then a third child. So now we're feeding thousands.
Right.
That wasn't on my radar.
Wow.
But it takes a village to feed one child. Again, it's just, it's the community coming together, partnering together, partnering with great organizations like Mighty Writers. And it's a team effort. It's not one person getting the shine, or it's not one person getting the press. We're all working together to address a need, which is hunger and food insecurity. So that's what that name really means.
Yeah. I just want to say I love that concept because, and I can say this openly, both Mark and I are faith-believing folks, right? And so when he talks about the enrichment piece and to feed, I look at that. I'm like, yes, we're impacting one, but we're impacting generations, right? If we can feed and enrich the lives of one, enrich the life of one person to be able to make an impact, now we're changing those generational gaps, right? And now we're addressing that access issue that we were talking about. And my story, I grew up in public housing in Brooklyn, New York. Everything that I was able to do was based on how I got that opportunity through a partnership program, a community after school program. I had a mentor. And here I sit today, having gone through a remedial program in undergrad, a master's level program, a doctorate in strategic leadership, right? Because of that development and that one opportunity to get enriched and taking advantage of that. So this little brown girl from Brooklyn, New York, whose mom was a heroin addict, not only do I sit in rooms in which I'm able to impact one other small child, it now changes the trajectory of what they have access to, right? And so I think about my own two daughters who had the complete opposite experience. They've gone through private school. They've had all of those accesses and been able to be on a pathway where they will do well in life. I have a daughter that's 21 that's studying to be an English teacher at the University of Pittsburgh. However, she's gone through all the Mighty Writers programs since it started in 2009.
Okay.
Right? And so she was that very first after-school student. And so it makes sense to be able to address that one person that impacts that actual generation. And so partnering with organizations like It Takes a Village to Feed One Child, I know that they get the holistic approach. I know they get the intentionality and a strategy behind how do we take opportunity to introduce these services at a time that makes sense for where the families and the communities and the students are.
And I'll say this too, she's such a great partner and she inspires me personally.
And this is mission work. I always say nonprofit is hard work, but it's also heart work,
yes.
Right? And so when you're coming from a place where you know what your calling is, what your impact and the potential can be, you just follow the steps.
The work that you do is so rewarding. And I see the passion and I love both of your stories. Food insecurity in general, though, you know, it does tend to hide behind closed doors. Mm-hmm. And I want to just talk to you both, if you can just get a comment from you on why it's important to speak openly about the hunger issue, especially as people don't want to.
It's a sensitive subject. Like, people don't want to disclose that they're struggling. So you have to create programs and you have to create partnerships in the community where you can sort of address their need, but they can hold their head up with dignity. I know growing up in my household, my mom held her head up high. And we saw the struggle, and we still saw her giving back to the community. Sometimes we fall on hard times as well. Like, you could be up one day, you could be down the next.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to give you, you know, a dissertation of why you wound up there. They just want you to help them. And they want you to help them where they can still maintain their dignity. So, like, a lot of our programs, a lot of the way our process, the way we do things, is not to embarrass these children, mm-hmm. not to embarrass the parents. Like, look, we're just here to help you. Mm-hmm. We don't care about what happened. We're here right now to help you. And that's what we're about.
What about funding? I know that you take donations and your partners, but I also understand that you rely on federal funds. Do you still have that to depend on?
Most of our funds come from the USDA. We just started fundraising back in 2024. So if you're listening, we need money. You know, feedonechild.org. That's the word, feed1child.org. So go to our website. You can donate. But we receive very little funding, if any, outside the USDA. We've been intentional in bringing people on board, grant writers, developmental officers, fundraisers. Mm-hmm. We put fundraisers on our board because that's our Achilles heel. That's our weakness as an organization. We don't raise enough money. And other organizations, if I could be honest, they raise more money than us, but they don't do the work the way mm-hmm. we do it.
Mm-hmm.
We're grassroots. We're boots on the ground. We're in the community. You know, we need funding just as much as they do, but we're not receiving it.
And I'll add to that, we also do need money and funds and things.
Mighty Writers.
MightyWriters.org, yes, MightyWriters.org. I will say, I'll add to that, part of why it's important to talk about it is I realize that in some of our communities, the historic nature of talking about, you know, what happens in this house stays in this house, right? You don't tell people our business, you don't share, What you don't reveal, you can't heal. True. What you don't share, you can't get help and resources. Right. I learned a lot through my mother's addiction process. When she decided to get clean and sober, it was a completely different person. Mark talked about this giving. He talked about this opportunity his mom would share with the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And my mother, very similar. And I realized mm-hmm. that it was her addiction and her ability not to ask for help that turned her into a person that she wasn't proud of. Once she started talking about what her needs were and how to ask for help, not only did she get, you know, access to like NA and other programs that would help her go through the addiction process, she was able to become the best person. And so, hey, in our household, we learned that if you need help financially, you need to find the programs that can help. If you need access to education or you need to take advantage of those opportunities that's provided for you. You know, we have not because we ask not. And right. And so being able to ask, being able to expose what the issue is and what you're lacking, and then being able to partner and find the right resource to address that gives you the best chance at surviving. And so you're coming out of survival mode now into thriving mode. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens with programs like this. And so it's important to have that conversation in every room. You know, I think about we're bringing literacy, financial literacy workshops into our communities, right? But it's that trust factor. How do we create an organization that we can trust? Because right. I grew up in a home where we didn't put money into the bank. Our savings was grandma's mattress, right? Gotcha. You put that mm-hmm. money in that drawer or you put it under grandma's mattress, you don't go and make a bank deposit. Or we don't go to the doctor. We go to the elder of the church and they put that oil and you pray. And it's like, but we need to go to the doctor. Right. Right? And so right. we have to find communities that and organizations that we can trust with that information. And so it takes a village to feed one child. We know that we can trust the information that they're giving us, and we can send our families and our community members to organizations and programs that they're running, because not only are we building that trust with the students, but we're also building it with the caregivers, which now we're now giving them an opportunity to live their best experience in life.
I know it takes a village to feed one child, appreciates volunteers, and of course donations oh, yeah. are needed. Please give us the information. Where can people go to learn more and to volunteer and donate?
They can go to feedonechild.org. So it's the word feed, number one, child.org.
Feedonechild.org.
Feedonechild.org.
And for Mighty Writers?
Same, mightywriters.org. You can find information to volunteer. We have a corporate volunteer program. We have an individual volunteer program. You can also donate in any way, shape, or form. And not just donate financially, but donate your time, collect items that we provide in distribution. We also look for mentors. So you can find all that information at mightywriters.org.
All right. Sounds good. Well, you both are doing tremendous work, needed work. And thank you for the work that you both do. Mark Wainwright and Dr. Corinne Green, thanks for joining us on Bridging Philly.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bridging Philly continues in a moment.
Summer break is here. I want my kids to have fun, but I also want them to keep their skills sharp. Between vacations and sports, I need something that fits our busy schedule without adding stress. That's why we use IXL. IXL is an award-winning online platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's proven to improve grades, and one subscription covers every child in the home, saving us time and money. It's trusted nationwide. And in fact, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now, and listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLlearning.com/audio. Visit IXLlearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Back to Bridging Philly from KYW News Radio 103.9 FM.
As Black History Month comes to a close, Shara Day Howard celebrates local innovator, advocate, and pioneer Vashti Dubois, who founded the Colored Girls Museum in Germantown, where stories of Black history, Black women, and girls are not only shared, but honored. Let's learn more on this latest Shara in the City.
This week on Shara in the City, we are ending Black History Month on a cool note. So I'm hanging out in Germantown with my buddy Vashti. She's hitting her 10-year anniversary. I can tell you the Colored Girls Museum has completely revolutionized what we think of community art, what we think about togetherness. And she's making a point of taking it up a notch in year 10. We're going to go hang out in the, you know, Colored Girls Museum, a little something. We're going to go through this portal with Vashti. Let's go. Hey, Vashti.
Hi, how you doing?
Welcome back. That's been a while, but not too long. Not, you know, long. Sing this song.
Never too long, never too long. It's always wonderful to have you.
In 10 years, I remember walking through these doors 10 years ago. Wow, you have come so far, and you found a way to bring everybody with you.
I think we are accompanied by so many people, some who we can see and some who we can no longer see, but their presence is strong. And yes, 10 years ago, you walked through these doors and so much has happened.
You were in a place of grief, but you were also in a place of creation. You lost your husband, and in that same motion, you've found a way to alchemize that loneliness and call on your community to show up. You were letting your grief be a stepping stool. Now, how is that a possible thing?
Yes, when I lost my husband, I also lost my best friend. Yeah. You know, I turn to the thing that I turn to when I need to fix myself, you know, my background in theater. Out of that came this idea to do a show about an ordinary house that wanted to play dress up, like a Colored Girls Museum. That's all. She just wanted to play dress up. And then she realized, oh, yeah, well, to make it really fun, I have to invite my friends. And I'll invite them into all the rooms in the house. And they'll all tell their story about being ordinary colored girls, right? And we'll dress up together. And then we'll open up the house and people will see us telling our story about being ordinary colored girls. So we're all playing dress up together. And so that was the show. And we opened as part of the Philadelphia Fringe Festival. And we have been going ever since. But to your point, right, calling on my friends, to help me play, right, is the thread that has continued to move the museum forward for all these 10 years. It is the thing that creates the community curators concept, which is community curators coming into the rooms and telling the stories that they want to tell with their artwork, right? So that spirit of play and really not taking ourselves too seriously, but understanding, because that's what the house gave to me. It gave me the space to, like, find my way through a really, really hard time. Wow. Well, I could not have predicted where I would come out on the other side of that. I wasn't, you know, sometimes you don't think there's a future beyond the grief. Sometimes you don't think there's a future behind any feeling of any moment that you're in at that exact moment. And the good news is anything that you're feeling right now, wherever you are in the world, right? The next day, the next week can produce something that you can't even imagine. The Colored Girls Museum is truly beyond my wildest imagination. And yet, in spirit, is very much a manifestation of what my beliefs are about the world. To have the gift of being a visionary, to have the gift of being a creative, is to have a space in the world where you can work it out, right? That it can be transformed into something else, not just the shape that it has in the moment, but it's always in motion, and we're always in motion. And so, yeah, this entity called the Colored Girls Museum has been in motion for the 10 years she's manifested at 4613 Newhall Street. But then I imagine she's also been in motion, you know, since I showed up here on this planet.
Right. Yeah, you guys were working your way toward one another.
We were.
I love it. And you've been through so much in this past 10 years. So, so much. Please give us an idea of what you've been through and how you got here.
Well, Well, when you're beginning something, you don't know how hard it is. Thank God, because you probably just wouldn't begin at all. You know, 2 years ago, zoning for the Colored Girls Museum, that was pretty emotional and pretty exhausting. We got so much community support. And that really gave us the energy to move forward into this 10th year with something to give back to our community. All of the changes that had to happen with the physical structure of the Colored Girls Museum, because that's a 141-year-old home. You know, she has a new garden, and so that happened like 3 years ago.
And that beautiful door.
Oh, that beautiful, beautiful gateway. Ooh, so yeah, 10-year anniversary. It's really, really hard to think where 10 years went. So what to expect in year 10? You know, one of the things that we really decided we wanted to spend our 10th year doing at the Colored Girls Museum, really being in partnership with the people who have been at different parts of our development, in partnership with us, really using the resources that we have to tap into the other parts of our ecosystem and elevate all of our stories at the same time. In this 10th year, we're looking forward to, like, the current show is Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud. All the rooms have these cool character names because characters are hanging out. All the kinds of names that Black people will completely and totally understand. As an example, the first room is named Who All Gonna Be Here? Right, because we all know how we are when we go on someplace, who all gonna be there? Because that's gonna determine, like, whether or not you show up.
There's gonna be food.
Oh, there's gonna be food. Is Cousin So-So gonna be there? The dining room is keep my name out your mouth. I think we all understand what we mean when we have to say that. And so, in spite of everything that's happening in the world, we are really choosing to focus on how we can continue to build dynamic and generative community amongst each other, amongst our friends and family members, without killing ourselves. And so the 10th year anniversary is all about celebrating the power of partnership and being together. We have had the privilege of hosting so many people, so many universities, so many churches, so many individuals, and taking their pictures on that porch, and really, again, reminding ourselves and other people that this is not unusual for Black folks. We have always, always been the keepers of our culture. We have always kept our stories. I hope that the Colored Girls Museum continues to just be a reminder that we can do this. That at a moment when people are talking about defunding this Black institution or that Black institution, we understand that we have the power as a community to really keep, maintain, and support our own. And then we're going to continue to do that.
You keep redefining what community is and freedom.
You know, liberation is the freedom to choose, right? And you can choose anything. You can choose to be together. You can choose to see the power in that. And my God, the creativity in that, right? What is that saying, right? If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. Like for me, liberation is about going together.
Thank you for joining us. Bridging Philly is brought to you by Gift of Life Donor Program. Register as an organ donor at donorsone.org. Follow me on Blue Sky at Raquel on Air. You can also follow Shara Day Howard on Blue Sky at Shara Day on Air. For Shara Day Howard and our producer Sabrina Boyd-Circa, I'm Raquel Williams. Be well.